Well, good morning. Thank you for your welcome. Can I have the zapper?
Okay.
Thank you. And Chris, if I could have my first slide up, that would be brilliant. And maybe the light on? Thank you. Don't want much, do I, as a preacher? Good. John chapter 11. If you have a Bible, you might want to keep it open and just check that's where we're heading. And we're looking at Jesus with his grieving friends. Questions. We all have them. And sometimes we get them answered, but so often we don't. In my line of work, I'm a preacher. It's what I do full time, and I chat to people. There are a number of questions that come up again and again and again. Who created God is one of them. How do you know God exists is another one. What about other religions? Is Christianity the only way to God, or is it just one of many ways? Why is the Bible so hard to understand? What am I doing here on planet Earth? Why did you make me the way that I am? A lot of young people often ask. But perhaps two of the most regular questions are these. Why is there so much suffering in the world? And what happens when we die? Why is there so much suffering in the world? What happens when we die? Well, this chapter, John chapter 11, gives us a little insight as to what happens when we die. My wife's father passed away a couple of years ago. He had cancer, so he died quite early in life. And as a family, my children were quite small, maybe six or eight. And we took them to the funeral. We went to the funeral. On the way home, we stopped at a little chef. I know how to treat my family. We stopped at a little chef restaurant for some food. And we were quite smartly dressed. We'd just come back from a funeral. And the waitress came around and she looked at us and said, "Oh, have you been somewhere special today?" Obviously noticing the smart clothes we had on. And one of us said, "Yeah, we've been to a funeral." And she went, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Whose funeral was it?" And the kid said, "Granddad's." And then wanting to help, because it's kind of an awkward situation when you find out someone's been to a funeral, the waitress looked at my two kids and said, "Well, don't worry. When the stars come out tonight, one will be shining extra bright, and that's your granddad." And we said, "Oh, no, it's not." We don't want granddad as a star in the sky. Granddad followed Jesus. We know exactly where granddad is, in the presence of the one he followed. Her intentions were good, but don't dilute the Christian hope into a maybe wishful load of nonsense. The Christian hope is a certainty. To be absent from the body is to be in the presence of Jesus. That's what the Bible teaches, and that's the assurance Jesus gives to those who trust him. I live on the coast these days, and sometimes we'll stand on the seashore, we look out and you see ferries and great big sea liners and sailing boats all heading out to sea. And if you stand there long enough, soon they're out of sight. Well, they're out of sight to the people on the seashore. But what's out of sight to us means for somebody else, maybe on the Isle of Wight, maybe on the French coast, they're coming into view. They're out of sight for one, but they come into view to another. And the Bible makes it clear that although loved ones pass away in this world, they're out of sight. Doesn't mean that's the end of them. The Christian hope is there is another place we go. And Jesus gives us that certainty that we need not fear it, but we can actually look forward to it. Now, don't misunderstand me. There is no emotion so deeply distressing, so painful as grief. And I've lost loved ones in my life. And as a preacher, as an evangelist, I take funerals and I've had to sit down with people who have been heartbroken and devastated at the loss of a loved one. So I'm not saying that dying is an easy or a pleasant experience. But what I am saying is this. It is not some black chasm we look into and we cross our fingers and hope for the best. There is light at the end of that tunnel. And if I can use I suppose it's a corny metaphor. That light is Jesus, who said, "I am the light of the world. Keep your eyes on me." He gives us hope, even in the darkest of times. I know some children who played a trick one breakfast time on one of their guests. They knew they were having boiled eggs, so they got one egg and they blew it. I don't know if you know that expression, where you put a kind of a little hole at each end and you get a straw and you blow the yolk out, so it's just a hollow shell. And so when the guest sat down to have his breakfast, they all enthusiastically hit their eggs and the shell cracked, and you could smell the odour and you could see the colour. But of course, when the guest hit his egg, it just shattered. It was just a shell. There was no substance. There was no content to it. And it was just pieces. And of course, it gave the children a giggle. And it gave the guest a bit of a fright or a shock. You know, when it comes to death, sadly, some folks are a bit like that blown egg. There's no content to them. And sadly, they fall apart because there's nothing there. Christians have a hope, a content, substance, an anchor for the soul, the Bible calls it. And that anchor is rooted in the words and the promises of Jesus and the teachings of the New Testament. And I love John chapter 11. It is an incredible passage. We have an account of someone who actually died, started to decompose, and then came back again and back to life in full health. Full health. Perhaps even better than it was before he died. The first miracle Jesus performed was at a wedding. And this last funeral Jesus performs is at a funeral. Now, we're not going to look at it verse by verse. We haven't got time for that. But let me just pull out a few threads for us this morning. Here's the first one. The comfort of knowing God cares. In desperate times, the believer, the Christian, has the comfort of knowing God cares. At the start of John chapter 11 in verse 3, news comes to Jesus. Your friend Lazarus is ill. There is no hope. The doctors cannot help him. He's going downhill fast. Come. That's the plea. That's the request. Who was Lazarus? Well, he wasn't one of the 12 disciples, but he was a close friend of Jesus. And he had two sisters, Mary and Martha. And these were close friends to Jesus. Three times in John chapter 11, we're told these words, that Jesus loved Lazarus. Verse 3, your dear friend, the one you really love. Verse 6, Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. Verse 36, the Jews or the crowd said, see how Jesus loved him. The emphasis all the way through the chapter is the special relationship Jesus has with Lazarus, Mary and Martha. And so when they say, Lord, he's ill, you expect Jesus to drop everything and rush. But he doesn't. He deliberately stays where he is 2 days. But he doesn't seem to be doing anything. He's not doing miracles there. He's not teaching anybody there. He just seems to be sitting around. It doesn't make sense. Well, we're going to see that Mary and Martha and Lazarus will discover the comfort of knowing God cares even when our circumstances change and don't always show it. My kids are 16 and 14, but when they were little and I used to pick them up on an afternoon sometimes from their junior school or infant school, as we walked home, we used to play a game. We used to walk down an alleyway and the sun would be behind us. And so we cast a great big shadow in front of us. And as you move slightly, so your shadow either lengthened or shrunk. And we used to play the game of trying to jump on each other's shadow. And the idea is if you saw someone jumping, you turned and your shadow, which was very long, suddenly went short. And then you tried to jump on theirs. And it was a bit of nonsense that we enjoyed. But shadows that grow and shrink, a bit like circumstances, aren't they? 1 week life is good. Next week life is bad. 1 week not a care in the world. The next week our world is falling in. Just like shifting shadows. But the Bible says God is not like a shifting shadow. He is the same yesterday, today and forever. And his love never changes. Circumstances might, but God never changes. And in those dark times, as well in those good times, keep on trusting and keep on relying on the love of God. And Mary and Martha are going to have a test of faith. Can they keep on trusting in the person of Jesus in the darkest time of their life? So first of all in the chapter, the comfort of knowing God cares. Secondly, the comfort of knowing God's presence. Verse 17, at long last, Jesus and the disciples arrive at Bethany. Trouble is, Lazarus has now been in the tomb 4 days. The place is heaving. Friends, relatives, the whole village has come out. They've come to pay their respects, to mourn the death of Lazarus. It's a heavy scene of weeping and wailing. And the arrival of Jesus kind of sparks for us two different reactions in the two sisters, Mary and Martha. They both rush out to see Jesus, but there's a contrast. Well, actually, they don't both rush out. Mary stays at home and Martha rushes out to meet Jesus. It's the complete opposite of last time Jesus went. In Luke chapter 10, where it's Mary who's at the feet of Jesus and Martha in the kitchen. But now there's a reversal. Martha runs to meet Jesus, but not Mary. When they eventually come face to face with Jesus, their words sound almost the same, but I think they're very different. Verse 21, Martha says, "If you'd have been here, my brother would not have died." Verse 32, Mary says, "Lord, if you'd have been here, my brother would not have died." If. It's a big word, if, isn't it? Both of them realise if you'd have not wasted 2 days, he wouldn't be dead. Where were you? That's what they're saying. Where were you, Lord, if you'd have been here? Two different reactions. Look at the reaction of Martha. I get the impression Martha is angry, hurt and confused. She wants intellectual answers. She wants to know, why did this happen? And why didn't you do anything about it? Where were you, Lord? You could have done something. You could have saved him. And as a kind of a second best, in verse 22 she says, "But even now, it's not too late. Ask God to raise him." And again, she's kind of saying, look, he'll do it for you, but he won't do it for us. I love the quiet, reassuring reply of Jesus in verse 23. "He will rise again," said Jesus. "I know, on the day of resurrection," says Martha. And in verse 25, Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die." Do you believe this? Jesus doesn't give her a slick answer. He doesn't try and explain his absence or the death of Lazarus. He just says, "I am the resurrection. Trust in me." And verse 27, she says, "I believe," and notice she uses three titles for Jesus. "I believe," and she uses the title Lord, Christ, and Son of God. "You haven't got all the answers, Martha, but you've got all of me," says Jesus. And she says, "That's all I need. That's all I need." And so she puts her hope in her Lord, in her Messiah, in the Son of God. Instead of blame, there is now trust. Instead of the need for answers, there's just the assurance he knows best. So he satisfies her intellectually. But Mary's a different case. Look at verse 32. Mary's needs are not intellectual. They're very different to Martha's. Mary needs emotional support. She comes running out, "Lord, if you'd have been here, he would not be dead." She says exactly the same thing. She has fought it constantly for 2 days. But it's emotional comfort, not intellectual comfort, that she needs. Martha wants to know that Jesus is in control. Mary needs to know Jesus cares. Look at verse 35. With the shortest verse in the English Bible, Jesus wept. Does Jesus care? Yes, he does. These are not crocodile tears for show. He is feeling the pain that Mary and Martha is feeling. And he grieves. He weeps. And Mary sees the humanity of Jesus. He does care. He does care. Someone has said this: when you are sick, you want a doctor, not a medical book or a formula. When you are being sued, you want a lawyer, not a law book. Likewise, when you face your last enemy, you want a saviour, and not just a doctrine written in a book. In Jesus Christ, every doctrine is made personal. In fact, in this chapter, there are three perspectives. Martha looks to the future. I know one day he'll rise. The crowd look to the past. They say in verse 37, couldn't he have saved him? Jesus centres their attention on the present. Verse 25, I am the resurrection and the life. What you need is me. Put your trust in me. Put your hope in me. Thirdly, we've got the comfort of knowing God's promise. Jesus, deeply moved, comes to the tomb, this cave with a stone in front of it. Take it away, he says. But Lord, he's been dead. There'll be a bad odour. I think this is one occasion you can't beat the King James Bible, which says, he stinks, or it stinketh. 4 days, not only dead, but corruption has started to happen in the body of Lazarus. Verse 40, Jesus said, look, don't I tell you, if you believe, you'll see God's glory? And verse 43 is just awesome. In a loud voice, he says, Lazarus, come out. I believe what the old Puritan writer said. If Jesus had just said, come out, all the dead bodies in that cemetery would have got up and come out. So he names him, Lazarus, the rest of you, your time will come. Lazarus, come on out. Come on out. Incredible. Incredible. And there, at the entrance of the tomb, bound up in bandages, is Lazarus. Let him loose, said Jesus. It's time to party. Time to party. And then fourthly and finally, you've got the comfort of knowing God has a plan. The comfort of knowing God has a plan. Two questions are raised, aren't they, by this incident. Why does God allow bad things to happen? Doesn't God care when we experience hurt and heartache? Both those answers find their conclusion or fulfillment in Jesus. C.S. Lewis said this: I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen. Not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. Let me read that again. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen. Not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. I think the same is true for us and God. We don't get all the answers. Probably we couldn't handle them or understand them if they were available. But God answers our questions in love and in reassurance in the person of Jesus. I am the resurrection and the life. Hope and purpose and resurrection into the presence of Jesus. For Lazarus then, and for every believer in the future. Let me finish by just saying, Martin Luther, the great reformer, said this: every man must do two things alone. He must do his own believing, and he must do his own dying. And John 11 is a reminder that one day, every person, it's a fact, one in one die, lest the Lord returns. But we'll all die one by one. But the secret to prepare for death is to believe, and to believe in the right person, Jesus Christ, who said, "I am the resurrection and the life. If somebody believes in me, they will live, even though they might physically die." Let me just ask you, have you put your faith in Jesus Christ for this life and the life to come? If not, you don't have that hope. You're like that hollow egg. And when life crumbles, there's not a lot of content. But you and I can have substance. We can have an anchor for the soul when we put our faith in Jesus Christ. Let's pray.